There is no city quite like New Orleans. I loved it at first sight, and I believe that setting aside London, which is my home, and Calcutta, which has a magic that I cannot hope to explain, I still think more kindly of it than of any other place on earth. It was busy and gay and bawdy and full of music and drink and pleasure. The architecture is also very fine. Spires and gracious buildings and plenty of shade and places to lounge while you watch the ivory girls sauntering by in their gorgeous dresses. Indeed, it was not unlike a kind of tropical Paris, but without those bloody frogs. New Orleans, of course, is where they civilized the French. The first thing I did was to find a barber. I kept my whiskers, of course. Where would Flash be without his tart catchers? But I had my hair trimmed short to suit the role I intended to play. Then I passed on to a good tailor and laid out most of my cash on a finely frilled shirt in the southern style, a silver-topped cane and a curly-brimmed white stovepipe hat. Finally, I sought out a printer, spun him a tale and placed an order for a gross of cards in the name of Count Rudy von Starnberg. It warmed me to think of how Rudy would have delighted in this. Evil throat-cutting bastard that he was. I had the printer run me off half a dozen of the cards then and there for immediate use, and promising to send round for the remainder next day, bade him good morning. Now I was ready to face the United States in all my glory. An immaculately dressed Austrian nobleman, speaking French and English with the accent of Vienna, and as different as you could wish from some English scoundrel calling himself Comber, who had vanished, bearded and nautically attired, some hours before. True, I had little cash and no place of abode, but you would never have imagined that from a glance at the splendid gentleman who now strolled at ease through the Vieux Carré. What I did, in my quest for quarters for the night, was to test a theory suggested to me years before by old Avitabile, the Italian soldier of fortune who had been governor of Peshawar. When you're like a light in the pocket, boy, in a strange town, you got to find a whorehouse, see? And a wheedle your way around the madam, you know? You charm, you talk, you tell any goddamn lies, but you get that madam into bed. Boom, boom, boom. Why, she's glad to lodge you for a week, ne mind for a night. Didn't Avitabile travel clear from Lisbon to Paris, and I didn't pay one night's lodgings, not a one. You bet, goddamn it, does a gentleman got to stay in hotels?
Well, if he could do it, so could I. And towards the evening, I set out to find a likely bawdy house. This, in New Orleans, was child's play. There may have been establishments in the Vieux Carré which were not bordellos, but precious few. What I did was to select a good-class house, send my card up to the proprietress by the nigger porter, and then address myself to the arch-harpy herself. I explained that I was an Austrian gentleman in search of his sister, who had eloped with a profligate Englishman and been abandoned by him during a visit to the United States. Since then we had heard nothing of her, except an unconfirmed report that she had somehow found her way into an establishment such as Madame was conducting. We were beside ourselves with grief and horror, and here was I, the son of the family, on a tragic quest to find the erring creature and bring her back to the bosom of her forgiving parents. Her name was Charlotte. She was a mere 18, blonde and of exquisite beauty. Could Madame render me any assistance in tracing her? Money, of course, was no object. This, of course, was to let me sum up the Madame and see if she was likely game. The first four weren't, beaky, sharp-eyed old harridans, but they swallowed the story. Three of them even went the length of making fruitless inquiries among their staffs. At the fifth knocking shop, I struck pure gold. It was a splendid establishment, all plush and crystal, with a nigger band playing wild music, and in the saloons off the main hall, the finest of trollops on view, willowy creatures of every colour from cream to jet black, with beautiful gowns cut away so their breasts were bare, and strutting like duchesses. However, I had no time for these distractions. My business was with the madam, and as soon as I was ushered upstairs into her private apartment, I knew I was home. She was nearing 50, a stately, buxom piece, who must have been a rare beauty. She was painted and powdered and jewelled like a May Day cuddy, with an ostrich plume in her red-dyed hair and a big peacock fan which she used to disclose her fine bust and shoulders. It was this, and the quizzy gleam in her eye as she sized me up and down, that convinced me I need look no further. Here was one who fancied flashy. No error. She was all affability, and to my astonishment, when she invited me to take a seat, her voice was purest Bow Bells.
"Honoured to have a gentleman of the nobility calling at our little establishment," says she, simpering and pressing my hand warmly. "How may we be of service, pray?"